Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. I hope you've all had a terrific week, enjoying the summer, crazy weather, no matter where you are, it seems. Again, my name is Mike Cutler. I'm a retired senior special agent with what used to be the Immigration and Naturalization Service. And ever since the terrorist attacks of 9/11, I decided to take my show on the road in a manner of speaking and provide my perspectives on the immigration crisis that has such a profound impact on so many of the challenges and threats that both America and Americans are facing today. And please don't mistake that for vilifying immigrants or being xenophobic, the usual arguments by the immigration anarchists who favor providing amnesty and identity documents to unknown millions of people whose identities, backgrounds, and intentions are unknown and unknowable. But it's about making certain that that system that should protect us from those whose intentions are malevolent does its job. Clearly, we're not getting that job done. And on some good news, I guess it's good news, Janet Napolitano, according to Fox News earlier today, will be stepping down as of September. Of course, we know what we have. We don't know what we're going to get. But remarkable set of circumstances. I guess that the Department of Homeland surrender is being surrendered by Ms. Napolitano, or at least her position is. If you want to know a little bit more about me and my efforts, I have two websites I very much would love for you to visit. My own personal website is michaelcutler.net. My last name, C-U-T-L-E-R, one word, michaelcutler.net. Also, I'm very proud to tell you, as you probably know if you've been listening to this program or reading my writings, I'm a senior fellow with a terrific organization known as CAPS, Californians for Population Stabilization. They are located in beautiful downtown Santa Barbara, California. Great friends of mine out there, great folks to work with, wonderful place to be. So those of you who are familiar with the Pacific side of this country know how beautiful a place Santa Barbara is. Of course, I'm on the opposite side where the bookends of the United States, the East Coast and West Coast. But please go to their wonderful website, capsweb.org. I've been affiliated with them with a bunch of years. And in fact, they are helping to make my trip to Washington possible on Monday, because I will be speaking at the D.C. March for Jobs, something I'm very much looking forward to. It's being put together by the Black American Leadership Alliance, and we'll be talking a little bit more about that. But without any further ado, my good friend and political activist Lauren Martell from South Carolina is joining me, Hilton Head, South Carolina, another beautiful part of the country. Lauren Martell, happy Friday. I presume that's you.
It is. How are you, Mike? It's great to hear your voice.
Boy, you just took the words out of my mouth. I was going to say, it's great to hear your voice. So there, you beat me to the punch.
I know. It's been a couple weeks. A lot has happened between now and then. We've celebrated the Independence Day of the United States of America, and so many other wonderful things have been accomplished between now and when we talked last. So.
And I don't know if you've heard the latest news. I was on the phone, in fact, earlier today with one of the folks on Neil Cavuto's program. I'll be joining, I believe Stuart Varney will be subbing for Neil on Monday, but after I speak at the rally in Washington, I'm supposed to go into the D.C. Bureau for Fox and discuss the rally, comprehensive immigration reform. And no doubt, this newest bit of news that Janet Napolitano will be stepping down effective September.
Yeah, isn't that's great. I mean, that's great news, and then, you just wonder who the successor is going to be.
Well,
that's just
my point, yeah. We know what we have.
Right.
But we don't know what we're going to get.
Yeah.
And,
we don't need a Morsi to come in.
the
Mohamed Morsi.
Let me dial back,
though, and let me just tell you, in preparation, I wanted to look at what's going on in Washington, D.C. on Monday. And I'm going up to Columbia, South Carolina tomorrow, and I just feel like driving straight up to Washington and joining you guys. Wow, is all I can say. What a group of great servant leaders that are all, and Leah Durant, the more I learn about her, the more amazing she is. What an incredible person. And what she has to say after working for the Department of Justice and also in immigration and things like that, it's just amazing to me how articulately she puts the evidence out there. And I mean, it's just so incredible. She touched my heart. I mean, what an amazing woman. And then you've got, you know, Colonel Alan West up there, Senator Ted Cruz, and so many others. And you,
Steve King.
I think I need to be there. That just
sounds great.
I think every American needs to get in their car and start driving right now.
Head for Washington, folks.
Head for Washington, D.C. Yeah.
It's where it's happening. And you know, this is what I've been saying right along. And, you know, at the end of my commentaries and at the end of my program, I always like to say democracy is not a spectator sport. And on Monday, we the people are going to reaffirm that. Democracy is most definitely not a spectator sport. And I think what most people have forgotten is that the most important title in this democratic republic is citizen. And I think we have forgotten that. Citizen.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you know, just my only concern is who might replace Napolitano. My dad used to have a saying that nothing is so good it couldn't be better or so bad it couldn't get worse.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Definitely.
And this administration
somebody
seems
in there.
To,
mm-hmm.
I'd love to know who their talent scouts are.
I know. I've heard one person speculate on it, so I don't even want to say. But yeah, it's just, you know, it is an interesting thing. We can only hope that it's going to be, you know, somebody who has a basic understanding of the United States Constitution and the relevant titles of law that are on the books right now, and doesn't look to some future laws or some future agendas or policies or anything like that, but enforces the laws as they are.
Well, and you know, when you realize how fundamental the immigration laws are, it's funny. We hear this all the time, you know, and somebody who told me that they knew people at Americans for Progress said, well, they really didn't want to talk about immigration. It's a single issue. I said, really? Single issue? Immigration, folks, is a major factor in every challenge and threat. It impacts national security. If the terrorists could not have entered the United States, they could not have attacked us. If the drug cartel traffickers could not have entered the United States, and if they couldn't get their poisons into our country, the cocaine, the heroin, the meth, marijuana, whatever, if they couldn't peddle that trash on our streets, then guess what? We'd be a lot safer and crime would be a lot less. It's estimated that 70% of all crime, directly or indirectly, is related to drugs. So we have people at DHS telling us the borders are secure, members of Congress debating whether or not we should make border security a priority. And then you look at this nonsense about the issue of jobs. How does it make sense that when you have how many millions of Americans unemployed or underemployed, losing their homes to foreclosure, that we're going to put millions of newly authorized workers into a labor pool, in addition to the fact we don't know who they are, even though they'll be given identity documents, they will be adding to the mass of people looking for work at a time that Americans can't find work. Does this make any sense to any rational human being?
No, and really, and the detriment to the American citizen is also really the result of what's apparently an enormous amount of fraud. I mean, listening to what you have to say and then listening to what Leah has to say, the fraud is just, I mean, so egregious. How is this happening within our country now? I mean, why do you think it is?
Well, I know why. If you look at what Alan Greenspan had to say, you know, we've heard so much of the eight gangsters or the Gang of Eight. Take your choice.
Mm-hmm.
You have Alan Greenspan on April 30th, 2009, and I've written about it. Caps has posted it. I have it up on my website, michaelcutler.net. You can go to the Senate Judiciary Committee and look at their videos. Greenspan on April 30th talked about the need to import lots more foreign workers. He even advocated for illegal aliens. You know, the undocumented aliens offer a flexible workforce. Really?
Mm-hmm.
We have so much contempt for our laws, this is the way to bring in workers. But he said that if you could bring in lots of high-tech workers, see, and nobody is really thinking about this. Comprehensive reform isn't only about the Mexican border, and it's not only about amnesty. It's about opening up the floodgates for H-1B and other high-tech, high-level, solid middle-class workers. And Greenspan referred to Americans with skills or education as the privileged elite, earning what he called a wage premium. In other words, your wages are okay, but that premium has got to go. What premium? I mean, it's astonishing If you want to talk about chutzpah, there's chutzpah, talking about this privileged elite with the wage premium. And he said if we could bring in all these foreign workers of necessity, they would occupy the now vacated housing units. Housing units, folks, are people's homes, people who lost their homes to foreclosure. He wants foreign families living in those homes to help the banking industry. And he said that we're paying the wage premium. We could lower the wages of these privileged elite if we subjected them to international competition. And he said that the goal should be to greatly reduce inequality in wages. Again, a very interesting use of language, because certainly if inequality is based on race, religion, gender, ethnicity, age, it's wrong. But he was concerned that there's inequality based on skill. So in other words, if you drop out of high school or you have a PhD, there shouldn't be much difference in your salaries. Wasn't that called communism, or am I getting that sideways?
Yeah, that really sounds exactly like it. That really does. And so,
to each according to his needs, from each according
to
his ability.
There's communist meetings throughout our country going on right now. I mean, hard for somebody to believe in my little bubble that I live in, you know, that that's what's going on. But in certain areas in our country, I mean, there are people who really do. And there's always been that undercurrent of, you know, people who think communism is great. But I think we're seeing a lot larger numbers than ever before, too, and that could be having to deal with some of these immigration issues.
Well, I'm just so thunderstruck by the whole deal. And you know, I consider myself to be a liberal. I'm a registered Democrat. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, and I really hate labels, by the way, folks, because labels don't tell the story. On some issues, you might say I'm a liberal. On another, I'm a middle of the road. On another issue, you might say I tend to be a little bit conservative. And I think most Americans are that way. You have to go issue by issue. This labeling is very dangerous. But I think the worst thing that we have, Lauren, and you're a conservative, and I consider you a good friend, and I love sharing the time with you on the program and when we speak off air. Folks, if you stop and talk to your neighbors, you will find that there is far more that unites us than divides us. This idea of divide and conquer is as old as the human species, and it's being used in America today. I've traveled around the country. I'm looking forward to being in Arizona tomorrow. I'll be the Walk the Line event with the pachyderms of Arizona. 104
fabulous
degrees in Phoenix. I mean, I'm not sure I want to be
drink
there.
Stay hydrated.
Well, stay in air-conditioned surroundings. But I'm going to be up in Arizona tomorrow and then heading for Washington. But let me tell you, wherever I've traveled around this great country, we are so similar. We really are, whether you're talking about people who live in the cities or in the rural areas, the farmers, the factory workers, the entrepreneurs. We all pretty much want the same things. We want security for the country. We want a bright future for our children. So to listen to this thing about this camp versus that camp, this group versus that group, at the end of the day, we need to talk to our neighbors, especially the neighbors who may disagree with us on issues. And I know that there's a lot of contentious issues about gay rights and abortion, and we can go down the whole litany. But I have a request for all of you who are listening tonight. Even if your neighbors disagree with you on those other issues, abortion, school prayer, gay rights, whatever, and I don't care what your position is. As an American, you're entitled to your positions. We all are. That's why the First Amendment not only talks about freedom of press, speech, and religion, but the right for peaceable assemblage and the right to seek redress of grievances. And boy, do we have grievances. But the idea is we need to sit down with our neighbors and try to convince them on the immigration issue. Because if we cannot get control not only of our borders, but of the immigration system that is supposed to keep out the criminals and the terrorists and protect American workers and their jobs, then nothing else that we do will matter. We will lose this country. The failure
That's
to
right.
secure the borders and enforce the immigration law undermines national security and the gallantry of our military. Their mission, folks, when you stop and think about it, is to keep our enemies as far from our shores as possible. That we now have tens of millions, forget this 11 million nonsense, I'm willing to bet we have well over 30 million today. with so many foreign nationals from every country. This isn't about Mexico. This isn't about people with brown skin. It's not about Latinos. It's not about people who speak Spanish. It's about foreign nationals whose identities, affiliations, intentions, and backgrounds are unknown and unknowable, means that you have got to make the presumption that among that population of illegal aliens are criminals, terrorists, those folks who would do us in a heartbeat. And if we don't get control over this, all the gallantry and sacrifices of our military are being negated. I hope I make sense to you folks. I hope I make sense to you, Lauren.
Well, you really do, and I absolutely agree with you about coming together. And what I see happening for this Washington, D.C. Rally on the 15th is a variety of different people coming together. And Leah Durant said it very well, because, I mean, she leads the Black American leadership, right? And that's, she's actually, you know, was affronted, I think, when she went to the Black caucus, because they told her that this was a Republican issue that she had brought before them, and she was really offended because she felt like it was just a national security issue, not a Republican or Democrat issue. And I think, you know, this is where I really come from, is I, instead of, you know, not liking people per se or labeling people, it's really doctrines. It's like, it's doctrines and it's the laws. And we have always been a wonderful civilized society. Our Western civilization has been one of a beacon of great laws that most of the time will work. The system has worked very well, better than probably any other system. Not perfect, but it works when left to it. And this rally that y'all are doing up in Washington, D.C. really comes at a unique time of watching Black people and white people and Democrats and Republicans and conservatives and liberals coming together on this, you're right, very much singular issue that is dealing with economy, safety, and the very essence of what free market America is going to continue on. Because this bill, this immigration bill that's 1,200 pages plus now, contains so much other stuff in it that doesn't even deal with particular issues on immigration. Not only doesn't it deal with how to really secure the borders and make America safer, it deals with other stuff that's absolutely irrelevant or contrary, counterintuitive to even be in the bill.
You're right. And by the way, you should know that Leah Durant is also the director of an organization known as Progressives for Immigration Reform. And Barbara Jordan, who was a Black, very liberal congresswoman, was the head of what was called the Jordan Commission. Their findings on immigration parallel what I've been saying, that if we don't enforce the law, we undermine American workers, their wages, their working conditions. We're undermining America's middle class. We are creating an environment in which America's poor will not get the opportunity to bootstrap themselves out of poverty. It's absolutely flabbergasting that anybody could say, oh, this is a conservative issue. No, it's not. Barbara Jordan was no conservative, and yet she was strongly, strongly, emphatically opposed to illegal immigration. It was about protecting American workers, their jobs, their families, and looking out for the other issues. And realize what we're talking about. You know, a while back I wrote a piece where I said that they should really have to do an environmental impact study before they could pass comprehensive reform. Think of what this would do for the infrastructure of cities around the United States in terms of access to arable water, potable water, rather, in terms of communication systems and transportation. Think about a town who's overflowing with population and what it does for traffic and what it does when so many people are buying gas and home heating oil and when they become shortages. This idea about classic economics is that as demand goes up and supply stagnates, the price goes through the roof. So if we keep on bringing more and more people into the United States, you're going to have more congestion on the highways, more congestion on municipal transportation services, whether it's light rail or buses. It impacts hospitals. It impacts schools. It impacts law enforcement. It impacts national security. How in the world can you ignore all that? And you know, I was thinking about that airline disaster in San Francisco. Thank God it wasn't as bad as it could have been, but it was bad enough. Mm-hmm. And everybody is doing this post-mortem. They all go looking for the black box. Well, why do they want the black box? so they could figure out what went wrong, so we learned from the mistakes and we don't do it again. So
right.
when you think about the black box and that airplane crash and every airplane crash, the first thing you hear about is the investigators from the NTSB are out looking for the black box and the voice recorders, the cockpit voice recorders. Think about the 1986 amnesty, which turned out to be disastrous. Number one, we were told it was going to be a one-shot deal. Number two, we were told that this would finally make immigration work. So let's look at it. It's a one-shot deal. Well, here we go again, as Reagan would say. Did it work? No, it didn't work. And in fact, it led to the biggest influx of illegal aliens in the history of the United States. So let's look for the voice recorder and the black box and figure out what went wrong with the 86 amnesty. And the biggest thing that went wrong with the 86 amnesty is that it did not contain provisions for enforcement. They turned around in that law, and for the first time, and I agreed with it, we all did, my colleagues and I agreed with it at the old INS, the old Immigration and Naturalization Service, that finally employers who could be shown to have intentionally hired illegal aliens could be prosecuted. And I got to tell you, for us, we were ecstatic. Because what we used to find, and you might not believe this, Lauren, but we had employers on occasion call up immigration to complain about the fact that they had illegal aliens working for them and asked us to arrest them. I kid you not. Because they knew that they were facing no prosecution for hiring them as long as they didn't harbor them, as long as they didn't induce them to come into the country, and as long as they didn't smuggle them in, they were pretty much good to go. Now, why in the world would you think an employer would rat out his own employees? It was usually done for one of two reasons or both. If the employees were trying to unionize and demand decent working conditions, that's why they hired them in the first place, so that they could give them substandard conditions. So they would say to us, go out and arrest these eight guys. You'd find, 50 illegal aliens, but they just wanted you to arrest the organizers of the union. The other idea was that they hoped that if we arrested and deported them, that they would not get paid for the work they had already done. Believe it or not. So suddenly, we were evening the scales of justice. You intentionally hire, you're going to get hammered just like the illegal alien gets hammered. And, the analogy that I make is the hooker and the John. Who is more guilty for prostitution? Well, the answer is they share equal guilt. If the hooker wasn't out there, the Johns wouldn't be out there looking for their so-called services. If the Johns weren't out there, then there'd be no point for the hooker to stand on the street corner. So there's a shared responsibility. Would you agree with me?
Right, and I think that if you add a punishment to both or a deterrent,
then it's fair, work.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going at it for both sides of the equation. Well, guess what? They never hired more agents to go after the employers. They never provided the crucial training in detection of document fraud. And we knew that what this really created was a cottage industry of document vendors, fraud document vendors. Now the Obama administration is going in the opposite direction. They're basically not doing much with illegal aliens caught working, except maybe give them employment authorization, but they are looking to prosecute the employers. So in rare cases, by the way, the numbers are very, very low because there's barely anybody out there doing the job. But on those rare occasions when they grab a headline, it's usually the employer who gets hammered but not the illegal alien. So why does the illegal alien care? Hey, I work for a boss who's been abusing me anyway. Let him go to jail. Let him get fined. Just like the people that are involved with the big fraud rings. They will prosecute a lawyer. They will prosecute a travel agency. They will prosecute somebody who brings in lots of illegal aliens, but not do anything to track down, arrest, or seek the deportation of the illegal aliens they bring in. And then they doctor the statistics and say, well, we have more deportations now than at any time, which is a lie, and let's be blunt about it, it is a lie, because they no longer really have deportations as a separate category. They call them all removals. So the alien who gets turned around at the airport and not admitted is considered a removal. The alien who voluntarily goes back to their home country so they can't be prosecuted if they were to reenter illegally is counted as a removal. And the alien who's told by a judge, you're out of here, and that is a formal deportation, is also being counted as a removal. So here we go. Look at what happened in the past. We've run the voice recorder. We've plugged in the computer, and we realized that the 86 system crashed and burned, made a big smoking hole in the ground, because there was no enforcement, there was no appropriate training. And now you look at the 86 situation, and now you look at where we are today, and guess what? The lessons of the 86 amnesty are being utterly ignored by comprehensive immigration reform. There is nothing in that legislation about going after fraud, even though the 9/11 Commission identified immigration fraud as a threat to national security and the embedding tactic of choice of the terrorists. They're not looking to enforce the law. So how in the world are you going to get a different outcome by providing unknown millions of illegal aliens? And you don't even know when they entered here, by the way, folks. We're not even sure what country they're from, let alone what their real names are. So it's a national security nightmare, and nothing being done to make sure there's integrity to the system, which is really the biggest failure of the 86 amnesty.
Right. And honestly, since then, and you know, especially over the last decade, it's almost as though, honestly, this immigration stuff and this whole reform has been illusory, in that I don't really think the people who have been in power want to actually enforce the law and keep America border secure and keep, you know, the infiltration from happening. And one of the reasons why I say that is just because in this new amnesty bill, and this is one of the things that's going on, you know, everything that's happening over in Egypt right now is, you know, we're watching it from afar, but that's some mighty stuff that's happening. Ultimately, Egypt is always most likely going to be subject to a constitution that's Sharia compliant. But the bottom line is, with the overthrow that went on there, there's a lot of people who are in Egypt right now who are more likely than not going to probably try to come over to America because it's safer over here for them, you know. So they'll come over to America and they'll live here and they'll, you know, colonize here for a period of time or however long they need to. But not only is that happening and can happen, you know, very easily by just crossing the borders, but also in this new amnesty bill, they've allowed, for example, it almost triples the number of Afghans that are permitted to come over here. Because in 2009, if you remember, Hillary Clinton did the Afghan Special Immigration Visa Program. That was set to expire this year. And so in, like, hidden in page, you know, 450 of the, you know, 1,200-page bill, there's this extension of just – and it doesn't even really say, you know, who gets to come. It's just, you know, 1,500 Afghans get to come to America every year. And it's extended till some unknown date, or 2018 or something.
Well, you know, you're raising a very –
this isn't keeping Americans safe.
No, you're not. And, you know, there's something very interesting that you're raising here, and great segue. And we didn't rehearse this, folks, but if we had rehearsed it, we couldn't be better here.
Right. It's much more fun to do live.
The social contract, yes. And I like doing it extemporaneously, but you're right. But this is all logical. These are all sequiturs that make sense. A little backstory. Around March, right around the time that I testified before the Senate Judiciary Committee, I got a call from my friends over at the Social Contract, and they do a lot of writing for the folks there. And Wayne called me up, and he said, Mike, would you be interested in writing an article about the inherent danger in the way that we administer the political asylum program? And this is something that's been of great concern to me. Now, I want to back up and give you folks out there who aren't familiar with my writings a quick background about political asylum. I'm Jewish. My grandmother died in the Holocaust. I was named for her, my mother's mother. My mother's family was decimated during the Holocaust. And she was fortunate that she was able to come here, so she rode out the storm that went through Europe, known as the Holocaust. But many of our family members and many other people, and by the way, everyone talks about 6 million Jews. In addition to 6 million Jews, and yes, it was an attempt at genocide, but 13 million people altogether were slaughtered during the Holocaust. It was horrific. But we want to provide safe haven for people who are in trouble, but we need to make certain that the system has integrity. Back when I was in high school and college, I was the president of a local B'nai B'rith group. A B'nai B'rith group is an organization that does charitable work, service work, under the banner of Judaism. It's similar to some Christian organizations. You know, a lot of great work is done by organizations backed by our religions, and that's fine. And I was the president of a local group. And one of the things that we did back when Lyndon Johnson was in the White House, which explains why I have so much gray or white hair or missing hair or whatever I have. I've been around for a while. We went to the White House, and we staged a rally calling on then-President Lyndon Johnson to go to the Soviet Union and tell the Russians to let the Jews and other religious and ethnic minorities leave Russia and come to the United States or any other country that would have them. When I became an immigration inspector in 1971 and sat in that booth at Kennedy Airport, I have to tell you what a joy it was for me to admit political refugees into the United States, because, you know, you had the sense of closing the circle. I had been to Washington 5 or 6 years earlier. Here we are. We have the people released from Russia, beginning their lives anew in the United States. It was a great day for me. It was an even greater day for them. I was ecstatic. But now what we're finding is that terrorists are claiming political asylum as a method of entering the United States and creating for themselves permanent status. And in 1993, a guy by the name of Almil Kansi stood outside the CIA headquarters in Virginia, January 93, with an AK-47. He had applied for political asylum. He was a citizen of Pakistan. He opened fire on the cars being driven into the compound. And as you read his story, and it's something I would recommend, read about how these guys operated. He was working as a partner in a courier service. So he's driving around Virginia and Washington in a courier truck. You know, we see them all the time. And it's camouflage. You don't even pay attention. You don't pay attention to cabs. You don't pay attention to buses. You don't pay attention to limos. You don't pay attention to these vans because they're normal. They're supposed to be there. It's routine. Well, he used that apparently to conduct surveillance to figure out what time, what gate, where he should position himself. And on that morning in January 93, he stood there with that AK-47 and killed 2 CIA officers and wounded 3 others, fled the country. Remember, foreign nationals in our country have an escape door they can go through. They have that hatch. It's called leave the country and go home. We tracked him down, put him on trial. He was found guilty and executed, but the people he killed remained dead and so forth. The next month, February 93, first attack, World Trade Center, you have a guy by the name of Ramzi Youssef, one of the terrorists, who had been granted political asylum. So we see it again and again and again. There was an incident that I discussed when I was on with Megyn Kelly over at Fox back in May last, it was 2 months ago. We were looking at the Tsarnaevs, these 2 thugs that carried out the terror attack in Boston. And I mentioned to her another guy by the name of Feza Hazian, who was from Eritrea, claimed to be running for his life in Eritrea when, in fact, he was smuggling aliens into the United States through Guatemala from Africa. We gave him political asylum, and there was nothing in the DOJ press release talking about efforts made to prosecute him for lying on the application, because clearly he wasn't in Eritrea running for his life. He was in Guatemala running from the federales for smuggling aliens. So time and again, what do we see? People committing fraud, in this case political asylum fraud, from dangerous countries, and we are admitting them without considering that they might be lying and they might pose a threat to our well-being. And a lie on paper is really what fraud is about. So I was asked in March to write this thing, and in April you have the Tsarnaev brothers shoot, you know, blowing up the Boston Marathon, and then the shootout with the police. And again, it comes back to political asylum fraud, because they were from Russia, they and their parents. To get political asylum, you have to claim credible fear, just like from Afghanistan. If I stay here because of my religion, because of my ethnicity, because of my tribal affiliation, because of my political belief, I will face persecution or worse. So they got approved, right, the Tsarnaevs. Now, I'm not making an accusation, but certainly someone needs to do an investigation, a thorough one this time. And what happened? They went back to Russia as soon as they got lawful status. I know you're a lawyer, but I don't even think you need to be an attorney to figure this out. If you claim credible fear and you get lawful status and you immediately go back to the country you said you couldn't return to, do you think there's a doubt that maybe you lied? What do you think, Lauren?
I definitely think so. And I mean, I really think that that people are using their emotions too much all across the board and not looking at things from a rational, evidentiary basis.
What do you mean?
Well, just in, like, if people really did their further investigation into these brothers and said right away, you know, this seems a little fishy here. This doesn't seem like it's really, a political asylum situation. Maybe we need to not extend it or shorten
but here's
the period
the
of time that
right,
they're
now,
over here.
Now, here's the problem. Citizenship and Immigration Services processes today well over 6 million applications every year. This is Lucy
right.
at the Bonbon Factory. Do you think there's any time to really scrutinize anything? And by the way, you should know something, Lauren. In fact, a good friend of mine and former colleague, Jerry Casale, has been on this program a couple of times. He and I began as immigration inspectors at Kennedy Airport. He eventually became an adjudications officer at headquarters. And he verified what I knew, but I always like to get verification from people who are authoritative. It takes only minutes to approve an application, hours or days to deny one. Because if you approve it, no one's going to appeal it. If you deny it, they go to their lawyer, and the lawyer files an appeal. So you've got to have written a report to justify the denial. You have to document it with articulable facts that were developed by an investigation. That's time-consuming. So
well, I get that.
You're
and
trying
you know,
to move. Go ahead. You
well,
understand
one
my
of my
point,
favorite, and one of my favorite trial lawyer seminars that I went to was years ago, and it actually was Johnny Cochran, if you can believe it. And Johnny Cochran was
he was
speaking,
a great lawyer. By the way, I love
fabulous
his line,
lawyer.
If you can't believe the messenger, you can't trust the messenger. If you can't trust the messenger.
Right, right. Well, and he did a lot of great. I mean, he had a lot of, and he spoke very eloquently at this particular seminar that was held at the Westin on Hilton Head for all of the trial lawyers, which 8 out of 10 are Democrats. And so let me tell you, I'm sitting there listening to him, and he basically inspired each one of us to treat each one of our cases just like the O.J. Simpson trial. You know, and of course everybody's sitting there thinking, well, nobody has the time or the money or the forensics
right.
to do all this, this, and this. The point is that at some point you have to take, and this comes from not necessarily an economic bottom line, but a bottom line of doing a job well done for the right reasons, for doing things for the right reasons. And so it is important that people take that extra time. You wouldn't not investigate a child's daycare that you'd send your child to. I mean, you do your due diligence, and due diligence is something that we've sort of lost. And if you really want to know the truth, I mean, it's got to be even more, because people applying to come in and applying for the political asylum, I mean, this administration has set up something even new, which is called the temporary protected status, particularly
well, no,
this
for goes Syrians back, it goes back. Recently. No, it goes back prior to this administration, but okay. It's been around for a while.
But, I mean, at least they've allowed like 9,000 more people to become eligible in the next 18 months, which when I feel like we should be just shutting down the border and saying no more people in, no more people out, you know, except for, you know, the due diligence. Without due diligence, we got to slow it down.
No, that's right. No, there's got to be due diligence. By the way, I got to say something. I just listened to what you said, and I want you to think of something. I like to be thought-provoking. You know me.
Yes, and I like to think.
No. Well, you do, but that's dangerous in this day and age.
I know, I might get arrested.
Hey, listen, remember
I just highlighted my hair really blonde, too, so it's probably people don't believe me one bit if I say I'm trying to think here.
No, but, come on, we know you're no dumb blonde. But here, look, but isn't this what they said here? You know, this is George Orwell. In a time of universal deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act.
Yes.
I mean, you know. But here's my point. You just talked about if you were going to send your child to child daycare, you would do due diligence. How many people hire au pairs, hire nannies who are illegal aliens? How many times have we seen that? And think of how dopey that is and how dangerous that is. How many people have hired day laborers to work on their homes, give them access to their houses? You know, a number of years ago, there was a story about a bunch of burglary teams that were put together by these bosses who would literally hire day laborers to do the work Americans wouldn't do, participate in robberies. And in some cases, because they would go to these real fancy houses, the estates and the mansions, they had raped and killed a bunch of women. They were robbing the jewelry. They were doing all kinds of damage. Because when someone runs the border, folks, this is really important, you don't know who they are, and you don't know why they ran the border. The immigration laws are supposed to keep out people who are ill. They have communicable diseases that are dangerous. People with mental illness that are violent or sex offenders. People who are convicted felons, human rights violators, war criminals, spies, and terrorists. So when some guy runs the border, yeah, he might just be poverty-stricken, so he knows he couldn't get a visa because everyone would figure he's coming to work illegally. But that also includes people who know that because of their extensive criminal histories could not be admitted into the United States. So when people hire day laborers and give them access to their homes, they are letting potential thugs into their own houses, and yet the image that people have, this compassionate nonsense. My question is this. We have now 1 in 6 American families on food stamps and living below the poverty line. 1 in 4 American kids not necessarily getting the nutrition he or she needs. And I'm not talking about Bloomberg with his insanity of salt and sugar, goodness. But what I'm talking about is people who really don't have the wherewithal to support their families. Why are there no people out there bemoaning the fact that in this country today, poverty has reared its ugly head, and it's a big fat head? I mean, this is a huge problem for Americans. Why is it that a struggling American family isn't, quote-unquote, as sexy as a foreign family living under tough conditions?
Well,
is that
I think
not an interesting question?
It's a great question. I think that there's a lot of propaganda. I think that there's a lot of misinformation and disinformation. And I think people grab on to social justice because it works on their emotions, you know, and it that has really, I mean, I hate to use the word propaganda, but I do believe that there is a lot of that going around our media and it gives disinformation. And so, you know, it's almost like we have to apologize, and this has been going on since the Obama administration and maybe even before, but apologize for being great. You know, America has to apologize for capitalism or free markets or setting the standard higher, you know. And so it seems like we've started lowering the bar instead of continuing to raise the bar. And that's been an easy thing to do, maybe. And I think in a lot of ways, I mean, and I even include myself, we've been very – situationally unaware and not really paying so much attention to. I mean, in a lot of ways, we've gotten too, what's the word I'm looking for? Something complacent,
yep.
Or just, you know, just too relaxed with it. And that has not helped us. You know, it's hard to stay vigilant all the time, but I think vigilance is a really good virtue, to be aware.
Well, vigilance is what security depends upon. But, you know, 60 Minutes did a story about a year and a half ago. I forget the time frame. But they showed this one guy. I mean, there were a couple of stories like it. But it was about families living in cars and trucks. And this poor guy had a family, had a wife and two kids, and he had a home. He was a carpenter. And he lost his job. I would not doubt to day laborers, by the way. It really puts a hell of a pressure on the construction trades, and it really hits close to home for me. My dad, may rest in peace, was a plumber. He was a tradesman. You know, if you ask my dad, what do you do for a living, he'd puff out his chest and say, I'm a plumber by trade. And it was always by trade. And when I was a young kid, I never understood the significance of those two words, by trade. He went through an apprenticeship program that, if I remember correctly, ran 5 years. That's not unlike a college education. And I don't think that a tradesman, whether it's a plumber, a bricklayer, an iron worker, an electrician, a carpenter, these folks are just as critical for America as school teachers, accountants, and lawyers. We all have an instrument to play. But now you're bringing in folks who have no training, no skills, they're day laborers, and they're displacing American workers. So here's this guy who's a carpenter, living in a truck. He lost his home to foreclosure. His wife passed away. He has these two teenage children. And what he was doing was driving to gas stations in the morning before school so the kids could wash up, put on fresh clothing, and go into school. And nobody was the wiser. And they were scared to death that if the authorities found out that they were homeless, that they would have been taken from their father. Now, when you can see story after story like that, and I've heard some people refer to liberals as bleeding hearts. Well, I am a bleeding heart, but I'm going to be honest. my heart bleeds first for my fellow Americans who are living under those circumstances. And what's wrong with that?
Right. Well, it's really like when the airplane's crashing and the person who's, you know, going to be able to help or the situation or help rescue people needs to put the oxygen on first. And
yep.
Right now, America needs to put the oxygen mask on and,
yep.
and get back to health herself so that, that America then can be the beacon that has always come to the aid. And, you know, good people exist everywhere you go. And that's really,
absolutely.
You know, and so even in these sad stories, there's story after story of overcomers, of inspiration, and of good people, you know, raising that bar again. And I believe that that's really what America is built on.
Well,
and,
but,
you know,
I agree with you, but here's my point. But here's my point.
Yeah.
The propaganda is we always associate the poverty with the plight of the illegal alien, ignoring what's happening to Americans. We hear
right,
about Cesar
right.
Chavez, who started the United Farm Workers Union. Do you know that the open borders folks, I call them what they are, immigration anarchists. Oh, Cesar Chavez, et cetera, et cetera. In point of fact, Chavez was adamantly, vehemently opposed to illegal immigration because it destroyed opportunities for American migrant workers. Look, migrant workers have always had a tough road, literally, to hoe, forgive the bad whatever, but they've always had a tough time. But when you can bring in illegal aliens and treat them in a ghastly manner, the unscrupulous farmers who want to do this do so to displace Americans because they know they can get away with more. And so they do it to exploit people. And this is horrible. And by the way, what it leads to, there was a story about the tomato farmers where he had illegal these people had illegal aliens living in the back of camper trucks with cold water to wash up in, where they were using the fields as a bathroom. If you wonder why you would see outbreaks of E. coli and salmonella and all the various toxins in the food chain, it's because of sanitary conditions on these farms where people are being worked worse than animals. And
so you
look at that and you say, well, wait a moment. Are you really an advocate for illegal immigration to know that this is the kind of abuse? And if you add something else to this equation, it's the fact that we are destroying the ability of American workers to do the decent jobs. And there are Americans who will do a lot of the backbreaking jobs. But you know what? If we need to import foreign workers legitimately, there's a mechanism in place. Now, they wanted to increase, and I don't know if they did it with the Farm Bill. I'd have to go look at it because I know they just passed the House version of the Farm Bill. But they wanted to bring in lots more farm workers. But here's the suggestion I made to the U.S. Senate when I spoke to my friends over there, Jeff Sessions people and Chuck Grassley. I work with their folks all the time. And I said, you know, if you're going to increase the number of farm work visas, you need to police the system. Because otherwise you have illegal aliens or people who want to be illegal aliens not coming in by running the Mexican border, but coming into a port of entry with that H-2A, the farm worker agricultural visa in their passport, and not going to the farm. So the farmer doesn't get the workers that he needs, but we get lots more illegal aliens. And very often these folks become involved in criminal activity. Back in the 70s, we had people coming in from Jamaica and the Caribbean, other Caribbean countries, and from Panama. And they were supposedly going to work in the orchards of upstate New York and the citrus groves of Florida, picking fruit. And guess what? They never went there, but they got involved with a different cash crop, cocaine and marijuana. And they became involved with bank robberies. There were violent shootouts among competing gangs. And it taught me something early on. This goes back to the 70s, that if you're allowing people into the country on visas, then you need to make certain that you police the system to see to it that it has integrity. It's estimated that at least 40% of the illegal aliens in our country didn't run the border, folks, but came through ports of entry and then got lost. It was the game of hide and seek where they were hiding and nobody is seeking. So, again, we come back to why is it only about the Mexican border when you hear about comprehensive reform? Once we secure the Mexican border, why does nobody talk about the overstays, the northern border, the stowaways, the people who lie on their applications, and so forth? This is a system, and you have people like Chuck Schumer and Rubio, Harry Reid and John McCain. You know, it's bipartisan. It's both sides of the aisle refusing to address all these failures that have national security implications.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I have a friend of mine who's a CPA in Orlando, Florida, sent in
okay.
a couple of questions. So if you don't mind me asking
sure.
you these
Go
specific
right ahead.
Questions, these are probably more from an economic perspective too, being that he's a CPA. Okay, here's one of the questions. With respect to the E-Verify proposals in the Senate bill, why are the implementation dates so far in the future? The IRS has had a Social Security number verification service for use in a wage reporting in place of a number for years. Is it online and works extremely well and efficiently? Why can't the platform be leveraged to implement an E-Verify sooner or immediately? That's
okay.
one of the questions.
All right, let me answer that real quickly. And then we have a caller. I just want to make sure who that is. But let me tell you what
okay.
the deal is on that real quickly. Everyone seems to think that E-Verify is the panacea. If we give 30 million, let's just pull a number out of the hat or out of my left ear, whatever,
mm-hmm.
people, lawful status, they will now pass E-Verify. E-Verify is important, and it needs to be implemented, and it should have a biometric component to cut down on identity theft. But immigration reform, just looking at E-Verify without looking at the lack of integrity to the program by which people would get lawful status and employment authorization, fails to address
right.
the bigger issues. In fact, if you look at the Deferred Action Program, these so-called childhood admissions, even though they could be up to age 31 and still qualify to apply, they're not
mm-hmm.
even doing any face-to-face interviews. So we're giving
yes.
identity
mm-hmm.
documents to people. We can't verify when they got here or who they are, and we're going to take
mm-hmm.
their word for it. The honor system only works for honorable people.
Mm. Bouncers at a club do more work than that.
That that's
they
a
look
great
at the people and they look at their, you know what I mean?
Let
you
me,
can't get in the club if you don't look like it, right,
let me,
your
let me
ID.
Just do this. All right, let me just take this call, and then, then we'll do your question. Hold on one second.
Okay, sounds good.
Let's see. Hi, this is Mike Cutler. Who am I speaking to?
This is Kenny
yep.
from North Florida Rock, Arkansas.
Hey, Kenny, how are you? Thank you for calling. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday to you, too. I've been busy. Been keeping up with the S-74 debate, talking with congressmen throughout my state here. One of my congressmen, Tom Cotton, wrote an editorial in the Wall Street Journal saying how the Senate bill is dead in the House, and I've heard that similar message from other congressmen. The thing I want to get is to get your contact these members of Congress and get them to be a confirmed no vote on any immigration bill that can conference with S-744. Don't let them just sit there and brag about how they're not going to pass the Senate bill, because right now they're working on something that probably has a path of legal status language and then a little bit more security promises. You know, maybe they'll promise three walls instead of just one, but it doesn't matter because they're empty promises.
Yep.
And, of course, it'll probably give more power to the bureaucracies at the discretion of whoever the DHS official becomes.
Yep.
Napolitano stepping down. And then,
yep.
of course, it'll also it'll be a duty-thing legislation in terms of going after the corruption that has refused to – the corrupt bureaucrats that have refused to enforce the 86 standards in the first place. So,
let me stop you there. It's not so much that the people working for the government don't want to do their job. Believe me, they want to do their job. I did that job for 30 years. There's a wonderful Yiddish expression that says when the fish goes bad, it smells from the head. You look at who's running DHS. You look at what the administration's policies have been. The prior administration was no winner either. You know, it's both sides of the aisle that have created the problem, but no administration
Absolutely.
has been as bad as this administration. But it's both sides of the aisle. It's not the dedicated employees. Most of them are screaming bloody murder. And, in fact, if you look at the unions that represent the Border Patrol and the ICE agents, they gave Napolitano and John Morton, the head of ICE, a no-confidence vote, and they're furious over what's going on. The AFL-CIO wouldn't give them a seat at the table, saying that they weren't really stakeholders. It's funny.
Yeah.
Doris Meisner, the Commissioner of Immigration, used to say that we were supposed to be customer-oriented. I actually agreed with Doris. Where we disagreed was who the customer was. I always thought that the customers were the citizens of the United States. What do you think of that, Kenny?
Yeah, they seem to care more about illegal aliens than U.S. citizens. Or even legal immigrants. Legal immigrants, boy, it's like nobody gives a crap about them.
Not at all. That's right. They must feel awfully foolish that they went through all the hoops, they jumped all over the place where they were supposed to jump, and then they see people getting in for free. It's kind of an interesting situation, isn't it?
Yeah, I write about this on a website called Little Rock Immigration Examiner. You can look at that where I talk about. I just posted another one about Bill O'Reilly's claims that He and Bob Beckel were both claiming that Republicans had to pass an immigration bill while Hillary was going to be president. And I basically posted the time for when they did an amnesty, they lost about 8% of the Hispanic vote. And when they acted like conservatives, like the Tea Party Revolution in 2010, they gained 8% of the Hispanic vote and they won elections.
Interesting, Ken. Well, you know, you're welcome to shoot me an email. I'll send to my website. Then I would ask you if you're interested. You could take the articles that I post. I'll add your email address, and you're welcome to post my articles on your website as well. And I hope you're planning to come to Washington on Monday.
I'm not sure. I'll be doing something regarding this. I'll be there in spirit, definitely, but in person, I'm not sure yet. I'll probably
okay.
be doing more calling and chatting with congressmen, but. Appreciate the offer. Thanks.
Hey, listen, I appreciate the work you're doing, and I appreciate your phone call. I hope you have a terrific weekend.
All right, you too.
Thanks. Anyway, going back to your question.
That was
Lawrence.
Excellent. Well, yeah,
yes,
and this question actually that I was going to ask is right along the line there. The next question in line from our CPA friend in Orlando, Florida, is for informational purposes, can you estimate the approximate number of people waiting legally to immigrate to the U.S. Will their applications be affected or expedited under the Senate bill?
God only knows. You know what? I can't give you a square answer because I don't know. But I have to tell you, you know, it comes back to something else that really bugs me. And a lot of people have fallen for this trap. And I'm sure you've all heard this. We're going to put these illegal aliens who legalize on the back of the line. How many times have we heard that one, Lauren?
Right.
It's the back of the line for citizenship, but they don't want citizenship. They want to be able to legally work and bring their families here. Under Comprehensive Immigration Reform, S-744, that line is only a few days long. It's not 12 years long. It's a few days long. So, in other words, you apply, you get employment authorization, and then when you get around to it, and probably at least a third of those folks who get green cards never apply for citizenship. In some cases, it's almost a half. So for them, the real ring on the merry-go-round that they grab for isn't citizenship. It's lawful status so they can work legally and send money home. And by the way, the money they send home is money that's lost to our economy. We're talking about tens of billions of dollars per year, money that is not spent in America or invested in America. We may as well be burning it for all the good it does us.
Wow. That's criminal, it seems like. But here's the next question. Does the current law or the Senate bill provide expedited processing of immigration applications for advanced degree holders, such as doctors, scientists, and engineers, etc.?
I believe it does, and I'm not certain. I have not plowed through the 1,200 pages, but I do know it would greatly increase the number of H-1B visas and provide, I believe, pathways for resident alien status for more high-tech workers and students. Now, here's two things that I want all of you to think about. There was a videotape, and it was originally aired on Lou Dobbs tonight when he was over at CNN, and I'd been on with Lou, I don't know how many gazillions of times when he was at CNN. And it was about lawyers on a stage providing advice to other lawyers as to how to make certain that when foreign workers applied for jobs, that the foreign workers got those jobs in spite of the fact that they were Americans who were ready, willing, and able to take the jobs, so that the attorneys could get their fees. So understand that, number one, it's not that we necessarily lack the high-tech workers, but that by flooding the market with people from third-world countries like India, they could drastically reduce wages and benefits to people who take those jobs, item number one. Item number two, because we failed to properly scrutinize the applications, we have on a number of occasions provided advanced training in strategic studies, science studies, biochemistry, and so forth, to terrorists. This woman, Siddiqui, who tried to kill soldiers
in Iran.
Right.
Yeah.
So she picks up a rifle, tries to kill our soldiers. She had gotten her PhD at Brandeis, and I believe it was MIT. So we are educating the people who want to kill us. On the one hand, we talk about nuclear nonproliferation. We're not going to teach anybody how to build bombs, but then we bring in students from third world countries to learn nuclear physics.
It's like running a race and completely handicapping yourself before you even get to the start line.
But the question
you know?
Is,
and you give
yourself?
Your opponent like the head start.
Here's the problem.
Let's say America,
let's
okay?
But you're missing my point.
I think we can define it.
No, you can't.
Okay,
I'll tell you
ahead,
why. I'm going to disagree with you tonight. I'm feisty tonight. Look out.
Good.
Yeah, and we'll stay a little bit long. I know we're at the top of the hour, but we'll stay a little bit long because you've got me fired up now. most of our American companies are not American companies. If you have a company that likes to put that little flag on there, oh, we're American, and it's a company that's been around forever, it's more than likely a multinational company, which means the only pledge of allegiance they say is to the bottom line, the profit margin.
Right.
They don't pay taxes
in
America. That's right. So, really, if an American company, quote, unquote, does well or not so well, or if a German company does better or a Japanese company, does it really matter at the end of the day if this supposed American company is not really paying taxes here and is not concerned about who it's hiring?
Yes, I understand your point there, and I have to concede to the gentleman from New York on that particular point. But I'm talking about individual citizens. Yes, but I'm talking about individual citizens, not corporations.
Americans.
So,
yeah, but understand that the corporations are the constituents that most of these politicians that are voting against Americans are looking to garner the favor of.
Right,
that's,
and therein lies the problem, because you don't have anybody who really takes the blame. I mean, you don't have anybody. At the end of the day, the corporations, there's no go-to guy. There's no guy who you, one particular person who, you know, makes. So, but I'm talking about the individual American citizen. That's what I was referring to. So,
who gets the shaft? And we're not talking about the elevator either.
Right. And you used to be able to define what an American citizen was. And now we've turned into the Bill Clinton era of what is. I mean, it's sort of like what a citizen is, a citizen is a citizen. I mean, it's whatever you want it to be at the moment. And that's not really how you can really function in a society built on prosperity and free markets when you're just redefining language, you know, at a whim. That's, you know, doesn't keep you safe.
Well, that's right, and you're right. But look, it's like the term alien. How in the world did the term alien become hate speech? You know, if you look at that term alien, it's simply defined by our laws as any person, not a citizen or national of the United States. There's nothing in there about smelling bad, being stupid, being immoral, whatever. It simply says you're not a citizen. And you know what? If you or I were to get in a car and drive to Canada, as soon as we cross that border, we become aliens because we are in a country in which we're not citizens. There's no insult, only clarity. So the problem here is that the open borders folks, the immigration anarchists, understand that there's no that clarity is the issue for them. They've got to obfuscate the issue, so they refer to these folks as being immigrants, so then they can say, well, Mike Cutler is anti-immigrant. No, I'm not. I am pro-immigrant, but the system has to have integrity. It's funny. Someone just shot me an email, my friend Rich, if he's listening, and I presume Rich is listening, saying that, you know, the Wall Street Journal, I didn't get to read the article, but I'm looking at the headline, says that E-Verify is a threat to, how do they put it, threat to liberty kind of thing. Look, we have to ID ourselves wherever we go. If you're worrying about a threat to liberty, then you better not take out any kind of a credit card, a car loan, student loan, or a mortgage. I've heard all these arguments about, well, you know, the Real ID Act, and we're going to fingerprint people. The idea is to prevent other people from stealing our identities. Illegal immigration was one of the biggest motivators for identity theft, which is why identity theft is the fastest-growing white-collar crime in America today. So, yes, anything could be abused, but the problem is that we need to verify who we are dealing with. And, you know, when they put people on the no-fly list, folks, or terror watch lists, very often it's a name without a biometric. So if you are a terrorist and you know that the likelihood is that we know that under your real name we're looking for you, your job then becomes to come up with an alternative identity for yourself, to put yourself in your own witness protection program, in a manner of speaking. And, in fact, that's what the terrorists did. The 9/11 Commission said that the 19 terrorists in the aggregate used more than 300 false identities or variations of false identities. And that's why I go crazy when I listen to this nonsense that right now Citizenship and Immigration Services of DHS, the Department of Homeland Surrender, as I refer to it, have processed hundreds of thousands of applications with something like a 95% approval rate. Remember what I said, if you're clearing the backlog, you're rubber stamping just about everything that lands on your desk. So they've got like a 95% approval rate, maybe even higher. And they've processed hundreds of thousands of applications and gave these aliens identity documents that in many states enable them to get driver's licenses, social security cards, open bank accounts, have access to corporate and government office buildings, airplanes, trains, travel freely around the country, get a job that if it doesn't have national security implications, may well have critical infrastructure implications. This is undermining national security and American workers. And when we hear this nonsense that, well, you know, these illegals do the work Americans won't do, there's two things I want all of you folks to think about. Put your thinking cap on. Number one, and I saw this firsthand, if the job is really so onerous and the conditions are so terrible and the wages are so meager, when some employer is approached by his former illegal alien employee and told, hey, Charlie, I'm going to keep working for you, but I got my magic card. I've been legalized, and I won't work for $5 an hour. I won't work off the books. And you better put in air conditioning because it's 120 degrees on the factory floor in the summertime, and that's illegal, and you got to clear a pathway to the fire escape. You know what they do? They fire these folks. Because once they become legalized, they become indistinguishable in the workforce from American workers, putting them in direct competition with American workers for jobs. And for the unscrupulous employer, they now know they need to hire the next wave of illegal aliens, which is how we got into this mess after the Reagan amnesty.
Well,
but nobody talks
about
that.
You raise good points. Yeah, you absolutely raise good points. And, you know, you said there that the system has to have integrity. And, you know, and I mean, I submit to you that, you know, in order for a system to have integrity, individuals have to have integrity. And so we all have to, you know, figure out what the right thing is and do the right thing. And that's,
the right,
you know,
thing
if,
is Washington
if we don't
on Monday.
Have,
that's
I know,
the right
that sounds, oh man, I would love to be there. I
be
still
there.
Might even try to go. I know, I've got to be in Augusta on the next day too, so I don't know if I can, but you know what? I am totally there with you, and I'm going to be, it's got to be live streamed. Is it going to be live streamed, any of it?
You know what? I don't know.
Some sort of network?
But by the way, you'll be able to catch me on Cavuto. On Monday afternoon, 4 o'clock New York time, for those of you all over the country, adjust your clock, 4 o'clock East Coast time, Eastern Daylight Saving time. I will be on with, I think it's Stuart Varney, from what I've been told. By the way, I am dying to find out what Stuart thinks, because after all, he did immigrate legally from England back in the 70s.
Sure, yeah.
So, I mean, if I were him, I would
tune
see this
into
as
that.
A friend. Wouldn't that be an interesting question?
I'm going to tune into that.
Stuart, if you're listening, I'm going to ask you about how you personally feel.
And, you know, that's actually one of the things that I was going to ask you for maybe even the next time that we talk down the road, is if you were now that we've identified all the problems with this immigration bill, and we hope that people are on the phone between now and then. Yeah, it kind of needs to just die, though, fully, and then not be part of it or any. You know, I mean, I think that's what most Americans are that I'm communicating with. They just want to have the thing be DOA, dead on arrival, you know, and not, you know.
Not even make
so
it arrival.
If everybody
not even
call,
make it arrival.
Yeah, right, in the ambulance, on the way. And,
on the way,
so
let
if
it croak.
We can just, if we can just call our congresspeople, call the people who have a sphere of influence around our congresspeople, those are things that we can really immediately do that might have an effect. But I do want to know, and this might be for another session, but what you would do in order to, you know, correct it, to immediately show Americans how
question.
We could have some, yeah,
great
what we'd
question.
Do to be proactive.
That's why I love having you on the show. Great question. Look, I call it COMPILE, Comprehensive Immigration Law Enforcement. We're being given false choices. You can raise your hand. I won't be able to see it. But how many of you folks out there in radio land have heard the story of, well, we can't deport them all? Listen, we don't enforce the law most of the time in most areas of law, whether it's about bank robbery or narcotics trafficking. Well, motor vehicle laws, think of, you know, I'll be honest, I always exceed the speed limit. It might be by 1 mile an hour, but speeding is speeding is speeding. So does that mean we're going to tear down all the speed signs in America? Am I right or wrong, Laura?
Good point. Excellent.
So we're told, well, we can't deport them all. That's right, we can't. We can't do most of it. Look, man's laws need to be enforced to be meaningful. Nature's laws are what they are because the speed of light is not established by a guy with a badge and a summons book and a radar gun. The speed of light is. Okay?
Yes.
But man's speed laws have to be enforced or they are meaningless. That's why they put up radar traps. And then, of course, everyone goes out and buys a radar detector, right? So it's this game of spy versus spy. So did the municipalities turn around and say, oh, my God, they have radar detectors. We'll take down the speed signs. We'll have a free-for-all on the highway. No. They say, okay, we'll redouble the effort. So maybe we'll make the use of radar detectors illegal or whatever. So you try to work at the laws, and it's only the immigration laws where the states have this open sense of rebellion against the law. Well, we are a sanctuary. Never mind that we may have criminals living in our communities. We're just making too much damn money. It may be dirty money, but we have money pouring into the economy. I wonder what would happen to America's economy. Here's a thought question. If we were able to suck all the drug money out of our economic structure. Imagine if the drug money evaporated out of the stock market. Imagine if the drug money evaporated out of the real estate market. Imagine if the drug money evaporated out of the high-end automobile dealerships. And there's a wonderful movie that you folks have got to see. It's available on Netflix, I found out. They're showing it on cable also. It's called Cocaine Cowboys. And it shows how people who got caught up in the drug trade were making money back in the 80s when the economy was faltering across America. Miami was experiencing a boom such as that which nobody had experienced before. They couldn't stock high-end cars or jewelry. Condos were, the price was in the stratosphere, all fueled by drug money. And the money was making its way into political campaign coffers as well. Our open borders are providing opportunities for the drugs to come in, for criminals to come in, for terrorists to come in, for competition for American workers to come in. So the people that know the price of everything and the value of nothing are ecstatic. What they're not recognizing is the damage this is doing to America and future generations of Americans. This is a betrayal of galactic proportions. I hope I make sense to you.
You do, and I agree with you. And so we continue the fight. And I'm so excited to hear how Arizona goes tomorrow and D.C. goes on Monday. And then I'm just going to leave you with this. Plow straight lines. That's in Philippians. It is. And it's a great one of those things. And it basically says in order to plow the straight lines, you just have to keep your focus on the focus. And that's how you can do it. Otherwise, you go in circles around in the crops.
Well, we have another call. Why don't you stay with me for a second? I just want to see who's calling real quickly. Let me just see who this is.
Okay.
Stay put, Lauren, just for a moment.
Sure.
This is Mike Cutler. Who's calling?
Hello, Mike Cutler. This is Steve Salvi. I had to call and say hello to you and Lauren today.
Ah, hey, Steve. How are you? How are things in Ohio? Steve is an immigration activist in the great state of Ohio. It's always great to hear your voice, Steve. How are you?
Excellent, Steve. And it's good to hear your voice.
Oh, hello, Lauren. Yeah, I just wanted to say, Mike, I will be joining you for the march on Monday. And I would hope that your listeners, if they can't make the march, alternatively visit their local congressional office if they can do that. And if they can't do that, call the Capitol and express their wishes. And I have a toll-free number your listeners can call.
Everybody get your pen out. Take this down. Go ahead, Steve.
I'll say it two times. 1-866-220-0044. One more time, 1-866-220-0044, and that will connect you to the Capitol operator.
And then you get to call your congressman of choice. Although, if it's Mr. Rubio, when you call him, they will tell you, please leave a message including your Florida zip code. So I guess if you're not from Florida, they're not going to want to talk to you. Because I did leave a message, but it was kind of like dial a prayer for atheists. You call, but nobody answers, or at least nobody calls back.
Anyway, I just called I'm actually at the printer now getting a sign printed up for the D.C. March. So
awesome.
I'm going to have to... I'm going to have to leave in a minute, but I did want to make a call in and say hello and encourage as many people to come to this exciting and historic march that's going to take place on Monday.
All right, now I want to know, what does the sign say, Steve?
Well, this my particular sign. I know this is it is focusing on jobs, and this is it's the Victims of Illegal Aliens Memorial, and it's a sign that has the photos of a number of people who have been killed by illegal aliens, and it's for a memorial, and you know those folks had jobs too, and they were contributing to the economy, and they had families, and it just lets people know that this system, the lack of enforcement of the federal government of the immigration laws has cost a lot of American lives, and so there's costs not only to these families, there's a cost to the country economically and socially, and they should be represented and remembered at this march.
Absolutely.
Oh,
I couldn't agree with you more. You know, Congressman Steve King, who will be speaking, is an advocate for that. He did a news conference about that. And in fact, it was kind of stunning. Somebody sent me the video where he had quoted my statement, because I remember at a hearing, he asked me if I knew how many people were killed every year by illegal aliens. And I'm always very careful to not just shoot from the hip. And I just said, Congressman, I don't know that number, but I would imagine it to be a multiple of the number of people killed on 9/11. He ultimately did a study, Congressman Steve King did, one of my heroes, and he said that he estimates that about 7,000 innocent people lose their lives every year to illegal and or criminal aliens. Can you imagine that?
And just the way, and Steve, the way you just put that so well and so powerfully, I mean, it's not just about the cost of the, you know, money. It's just the cost of the lives and the influence on their children and the people who are working, and they were, you know, had lives and were productive in society, and it's just, that's devastating. Wow.
Well,
God bless
that,
that
you know what, this,
march
what this
that
comes
you guys
back,
are going on.
Yes, and you know what, this comes back to the point that I keep making. The loss of American lives and the future of Americans looking for their thin slice of the American dream is certainly no less significant than the plight that we keep hearing about illegal aliens. Charity begins at home, folks. And I stand with my fellow Americans of every race, every religion, every ethnicity, and every political orientation. We are all, as Americans, entitled to whatever political beliefs we may want to hold, but at the end of the day, we need to come together over the biggest threat to our survival and well-being, and that's to secure America's borders and enforce America's immigration laws effectively and fairly to bring an end to the needless deaths and to the needless despair of Americans who have been shut out from their own thin slice of the American dream. Any last thought on that, Steve?
Yeah, well, I can tell you what, you know, as I was, you know, I deal with this issue every day, and the victims, you know, victims.
Yes, and I appreciate all your hard work, by the way.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. But I tell you what, even though I deal with it every day, as I was putting these, you know, I've done individual summaries of situations where someone was, you know, killed or murdered. But, you know, this is the first time I put all the pictures together. And I tell you what, it even struck me. And you really see the fabric of society. You know, it represents people of every ethnic origin, every color, liberals, conservatives, Democrats, Republicans, everybody. Yeah, and they all have been victims. So everyone's included in this, and that's really what the banner demonstrates when you see it.
That's
so
awesome.
With that, I appreciate your time on your show, and I will see you on Monday. And Lauren, I will talk to you, if not on Facebook, in person.
I will absolutely look forward to hearing updates. Thank you so much, Steve.
Bye-bye.
Okay, so long. Have a good weekend. Travel safely. Well,
there
you go, Lauren.
That was awesome.
Was that not awesome? And you know, folks, this really is the point. We need to come together as Americans on 9/11 here in New York City. Let me tell you, I think that all of us who were here still suffer post-traumatic stress. I know over the years I have gone to the memorial at the trade at the what was the World Trade Center, and I've watched that tower grow from the excavation to the nearly completed tower, and it's magnificent. But as I said, and you heard me say it at the Tea Party convention, I still miss the old towers, and I certainly miss those 3,000 people who were slaughtered at the Trade Center, in that field in Shanksville, Pennsylvania, and at the Pentagon. This is about preserving and protecting American lives and American jobs and looking out for Americans first. You know, nobody would criticize a parent for racing into a burning building to save their own child before they try to save someone else's child. I understand the poverty that so many people around the world suffer each day. My heart does go out to them. When I was an agent and arrested people who I was convinced was doing nothing more illegal than working illegally, I did not take a victory lap over it. No one jumped up and gave each other a fist bumps and said, wow. You certainly do, though, when you arrest drug dealers, which is one of the reasons I went over to the Drug Task Force. There's certainly no ambivalence. But at the end of the day, you need to enforce those immigration laws to remember to look out for our own people first. It's not about race. It's not about religion. It's not about ethnicity. It's simply about distinguishing Americans from non-citizens. That's why the word alien is so problematic for the immigration anarchists, because it provides clarity to the whole debate, and they know that they can't win if we have clarity to this discussion.
Well, I stand with you, Michael Cutler. Honored to know you, and I'm looking forward to hearing how Sunday and Monday goes for you. And
well, thank you. And I hope
thank
you get
up
there.
For letting me be a guest on your show. I
oh,
know
no,
it's you know. And I never say never, because I wasn't even planning on going to Columbia, and that all
changed. I'm
going to
be
really
looking
quickly,
for you.
So.
I'm bringing my
Absolutely.
Binoculars, and I'm going to look for you out there.
If I make it, you'll find me. I'll find you. But
okay.
So have a wonderful time, and you know, just continue to edify those in the fight, and continue to just bring more people to the education, you know, table. So thank you so
That's
much for
goal.
Everything you do.
Thank you, Lauren.
All
thank
right.
you for your support.
Talk to you
and
soon.
Thank you for joining me. Have a great weekend.
I'm going to tune in. I'm going to tune in for sure on the Neil Cavuto show at 4 o'clock Monday.
I want all you folks watching Cavuto, and I want you to wave. I'll be looking for you.
All right. Talk
all
to
right,
you soon.
Kiddo.
Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. Well, we're wrapping up another, I hope, enjoyable program for all of you. Lauren Martell is a joy to join. In fact, it was Lauren who made it possible for me to speak at two of the Tea Party conventions in beautiful Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Great place to be, I got to tell you. It's a marvelous town. And great working with Lauren. Great to hear from Steve Salvi and the caller, Ken. You know, folks, again, I'm going to keep making the same point. I don't care what part of the country we're from. I don't care if we are city dwellers or country guys or whatever, or gals. It's not about religion, ethnicity. It's about being Americans. It's about coming together to make certain that for once and for all, we do, in fact, have representative democracy in America. It's time that the American people got their voices heard. If there's any way at all for you folks out there to make it to Washington, D.C. on Monday, please be there. As many people as we can get there, that's what we need. We need to send a clear message. You know, you want to jump up sometimes and yell at them, can you hear us now? And that's going to be the question for Monday. Can they hear us now? It's always good spending the end of the week with you, at least the end of the work week, Fridays, with all of you. It's a part of my life that I've come to really enjoy. I hope you enjoy being with me or listening in on the program and on occasion calling in. It's always fun when we have a conversation with listeners. And again, please go to those two websites, michaelcutler.net, capsweb.org for my good friends out in Santa Barbara, California. Hope you all have a terrific weekend. And I'll be back next week, same time, right here on the Michael Cutler Hour. Meanwhile, please remember, folks, democracy is not a spectator sport. Get involved, get your voices heard, and make your elected representatives do precisely that, represent you and your family. Have a great weekend, everybody. See you next week.